deep into that. Because that's my source. I mean, when I came into the rooms of AA, I didn't have a clue how you got along with others. I was just a taker. I was selfish, self-centered, inconsiderate. I had all those things show up in my inventory, and I didn't think I was that until I did an inventory. The sex conduct in review is really a relationships review. It's not just about our sexual conduct. That's just being very specific how we use people selfishly in the sex act. But it also has to do with relationships, intimate relationships, that we also have problems in that area too. Problems with our brother, our mother, our sister, very close friends and stuff. Any people that are intimate and they get too close. I know the way I grew up in a dysfunctional home. I hate that word, but it's describes me in a second. My mother was an alcoholic and she was selfish, self-centered to the extreme. Her personality was akin to Satan's sister. My father, when they got divorced when I was 18 months old, and he wasn't a part of my life. So I learned very young to push people away and don't let them get close to me, because I was trying to protect that inner child. I was screaming for love. And I couldn't acknowledge that I needed and wanted love, you know, because that was a sign of weakness. That was the kind of culture I grew up in. And I married the first woman that said she loved me. That's how hungry I was and starved for love. Didn't know how I felt about her. But this is when I was when I was drugging and drinking. And of course I married one of us, an alcoholic. And that relationship was doomed for failure. When I got sober, And the previous 5 years before I got sober, I was separated from my wife, that wife that I talked about, and I wanted to get laid in the worst way. I was always going out looking for her. And very often, I went home alone. Every once in a while, I'd wake up with her, and she was coyote ugly. You know what coyote ugly is?
Yeah.
You've heard that? And an amazing thing happened when I got sober. I realized that I didn't have to do all the chase. And I also didn't feel I was a suave or a Don Juan or anything. Didn't have the right words. I didn't know how to attract a woman into my apartment other than by saying, I got a really good bag of weed. Would you want to come up and smoke? And I get sober and I realize women flirt, and I'm flirting back, and I'm starting to get laid. And they told me in that first year, no relationships in your first year. And I said, I'm not having a relationship, I'm just getting laid. What I discovered, though, I think God was just giving me enough rope to hang myself or whatever it is, to realize that all those sexual relationships were wanting. I mean, after I had sex with them, I realized they're talking some stupid shit. I didn't like what was coming out of their mind. I didn't like their personalities. I didn't like their values. And I began to realize, I'm not looking just for sex. I'm looking for love. I'm looking for a life partner. I really want to share my life with someone. Anyhow, that was my experience. Although I did use the book, I was getting laid a lot, and I said to my sponsor, I'm getting laid a lot. I mean, is that bad? They said no sexual relationships. He says, the book says, was it selfish or not? So I made it a point not to be selfish and not to be untruthful and not to be inconsiderate with these women that I was. They were granting me the favor of allowing me into their bed. And after a while, I realized there was something more I wanted. And the woman I had met when I was 100 days sober, and I cheated on her like a dog. I was seeing a lot of other women at the time. But after a few years, I realized we had something special. There was a knowing there that I would start a sentence and she could finish it. We shared the same values. She was fun to be around. She had a good sense of humor. And she was very supportive of me and what I was doing in AA to get sober. Also, I'm a little bit older than you guys, and this is during the 80s when AIDS was hitting the scene. And I thought that the answer to that was to stop being sleeping around and become monogamous with a good girl. And I settled down with her. What I've discovered over the years in this relationship is that it's not about sex. You know, I don't know what happens nowadays to you guys. My generation, we fucked first and got to know each other afterwards. Once I got to know her, and she was a really good person, and we started to grow together, there's another kind of bond there. I'm 64 years old, and whether you guys like it or not, eventually that imperious urge starts to slow down. So there has to be something there a lot more to keep that relationship solid, you know, and it's called love. And there are books written about love. All I know is what I've learned from my sponsor. And I'll close with this, and you guys aren't going to like what my sponsor told me. Said, you know how you have a successful marriage? You give 110% and you expect nothing in return. Thanks for letting me share.
10 minutes? Can I do okay? Right.
Next speaker is Kevin. How's it going, everybody? My name is Kevin. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Kevin.
See, my sobriety date is June 25th, 2013, and you know, I'm going to take this 10 minutes to give you guys a little bit of my own experience and talk to you guys about relationships. Topic in particular, we're going to talk about rehab romance. So I checked myself into a rehab back in June of 2013, and you know, I went there, and at the time, on my way in, I had just gotten out of a relationship with a girl with some outside issues of her own, and you know, I was really hoping she was going to wait around for me, and she didn't, and you know, I think I moved past that in my first week of being in a co-ed rehab, because the scenery was great, you know, so I was able to forget pretty quickly about that and start moving on with my life. But you know, during my time in treatment, I came in with that passion, that desire to get sober. You know, I had the willingness, the desperation. I had lost everything, and I was ready to do the work. And one of the advantages for me is I was hundreds of miles away from my hometown. I didn't know anybody there. So for the first time in my life, you know, I decided to just kind of be me and not worry too much about what kind of impression I landed on people there. And, you know, it was a good time, it was a good experience, and I didn't get caught up in rehab while I was there in particular, but there was a girl there, she had a couple weeks sober after I got my month, she was about 2 weeks behind me, and when I went to graduate, you know, my last day there, I had talked to this girl maybe one time before, you know, in my entire time there, and, you know, she comes up to me on my graduation day and kind of starts tearing up a bit and says, I'm really going to miss you, you know, so... So for me, that's it. I'm hooked. You know, I'm sold. This is the one. We're gonna get married. We're gonna tie the knot. We're doing this thing. So I moved back to Flagstaff, 200 miles away, and you know, I started to talk to this girl. You know, I stayed in touch with her, and you know, it's still my girlfriend to this day. We've been together a little bit over 2 years now. And we actually have an incredible relationship, and I know this is not what most people expect coming into the men's relationship panel. You expect to hear a lot of fire and brimstone and, you know, not to do it, but there's a lot of things that happened in our situation that I think allowed things to happen the way it did. You know, I was a multiple felon going into treatment, so when I got back to Flagstaff, Coconino County was very happy to keep me there and not let me go anywhere else. You know, they were really good hosts for me, and the girl that I was talking to at the time was a multiple felon down in Maricopa County, and they wanted to hold on to her. They didn't want her to have to worry about going anywhere else either, so they kept a tight lock on that too. You know, what was different for me about this situation as opposed to any other girl I've ever dated in my life, anything else I've ever pursued, is I didn't have the opportunity to try to have sex with this woman every single day. You know, I was kind of forced into a situation where I actually had to talk to her and, like, get to know her and, like, kind of find out who she was as a person. And that was weird. It was really weird. It definitely didn't feel right at the beginning, but But, you know, I kind of started to stick it out. And I think in the beginning I stuck it out a lot on resentments because when I came up, you know, everybody was telling me, like, oh, man, you know, you're dating somebody and you've only been in the program for, like a month, dude. You can't do that, man. It's not going to work. And, you know, I would just burn about that. I would burn about the thought that people were trying to tell me what to do, and I would miss the value of the fact that people were trying to give me suggestions. You know, they were trying to give me good advice, you know, things that I need to know to stay sober and to not hurt other people along the way. So, you know, I held on to that resentment for a while, and I stuck around. I got to know this person. But the whole time, you know, while I was up in Flag, one thing I got to do was I got to work my own program. You know, this girl was 200 miles away doing her own thing and vice versa. And I was up here and I got to go to meetings. I got to become a part of the fellowship. I got to work with a sponsor. I got to do the steps and not rely on another individual for my happiness. You know, and I think that fact alone for us is the aspect that that made things a little bit differently. You know, if I'd had the opportunity to act off of my impulses and my desires at 3 months sober, I probably would have moved in, proposed to her, gotten married to her, and divorced by now. You know, because that's how I do everything in life. I want everything in excess. I want it right now. I want to feel good today, not tomorrow. You know, I really have little concept of understanding patience, of waiting for something, of working for something. And I got the opportunity to do that in this situation, even if it really wasn't what I wanted to do in the beginning. I got to learn a lot about another human being. I got to look at this person as another human being. You know, for the majority of my life before that, whenever I dated a girl, whenever I went out to the bars trying to look for somebody to sleep with that night, there was always a plan and an end game. You know, for me, the plan was to go there, find somebody, talk to them, you know, get to know them, get a phone number, go to dinner, have sex. You know, or maybe not have to go to dinner, go to a movie, have sex. The end game was always to have sex. You know, and I looked at women and I treated women as material objects. You know, I didn't see them as other people. I saw them as a way to fulfill the feeling that I wanted to be okay. And, you know, it talks about that a lot in the big book and in the sex inventory that Saul was talking about. You know, I have a terrible habit of being selfish and self-centered and misusing the God-given instincts I have for the wrong reasons. And that sex instinct is one of them. You know, I want to feel good. I want to feel different than the way I feel right now. And sex is one of those outlets that allows me to feel okay, especially in sobriety. You know, what else am I going to do? I smoke cigarettes, drink coffee, and, you know, try to get laid. So when you come in with that mentality, it's just all about me. It's all about me trying to get what I need, what I want out of the situation. For the first time in my life, though, like, I got to realize that she was another person who had gone through the same things in life that I had, the same struggles. She had thoughts, feelings, emotions, insecurities, fears, you know, things that she had to deal with. And I got to learn about this person and grow closer to her. And, you know, I don't know how many of you guys were here last night for our main speaker, Nora, but she said something incredible on the matter, talking about her marriage, you know, and she said that her first sponsor told her that love is an action. You know, and like any other actions in life, we have to put work into them if we want to get a good result out of it. You know, and a relationship is constant work. You know, it's not always easy. There's going to be ups and downs, but I have to be willing to put work into it, to put her needs before mine, you know, because that's what a relationship's all about, just like Saul said as well, being willing to put in 110% and get back nothing. You know, and if you're willing to do that, then good things can happen for you, but you know, I took this experience, you know, probably around 1 year sober, and, you know, I still had that ego behind it of like, yeah, you know, I'm dating a girl from rehab and we're still doing well, so fuck everybody, like, it worked out. You know, it's not in the big book, it doesn't say anything about it. You know, I had this attitude, and I realized I started sponsoring guys, you know, and they would come to me with these issues like, hey, man, you know, so I started talking to somebody, is that okay? You know, and I was like, oh, yeah, that should be fine. Well, sure enough, it was not fine. It did not work out, you know. 9 times out of 10, it ended horribly for either one party involved or both. You know, and there was a lot of reasons that it went wrong, and I've seen people go out over it. I've seen people drink over it. I just watched it happen to a very close friend of mine last week. You know, he jumped into a relationship real quick after 2 months, you know, engaged to the girl, and, you know, things went south. And, you know, these things happen, though, because, you know, we so badly want to fill that void that we have inside, the same void that we spent so much time filling with drugs and alcohol and every other thing we could find, that we put the wrong things in, you know, and that's the spot that we need to have for our higher power, for God. You know, that's the spot that this program has been able to fill for me. And that's the thing, the gift that this program has given back to me. You know, and so when I'm putting the right things in, I have the opportunity to give something back, you know, because I actually have something worth giving back. So as long as I can keep my priorities straight and keep this program and my sobriety first and foremost, I have the opportunity to have other things in my life. You know, and the second I start mixing those things up is the second I can start losing everything real quick. So, you know, I'm grateful for everything this program's given me, the opportunity to be here with you guys tonight and share a little bit and hear from the rest of our speakers. So, you know, that's what I'm looking forward to. And with that, I'll pass. Thanks.
Just have to go.
All right. Please help me to welcome our next speaker, Taylor.
Taylor. I'm Taylor. I'm an alcoholic. Thank you, Kevin. I also want to touch on something. Being an alcoholic, I have this thing called the spiritual malady. And with relationships and sex and all these things, like, I always go to those first. It's the next best thing. It's the next best high or drunk after giving away drugs and alcohol for me. I love it. It's, you know, the closest thing to it. And so when I do this and I go search for sex everywhere I go, I hurt people in my path. I burn bridges. I hurt myself that I don't even notice. And then, but when I do put God, which I've learned in my program today, in there, and I get a relationship with God, relationships tend to work a little bit better because I'm not just going for these selfish needs. So I'm going to go back to a story when I was in Crossroads in Arizona, in Scottsdale, or Phoenix. And I actually started dating a girl after about, I think, 2 weeks sober or something. And it was a horrible idea. But I was looking for something to fill this hole because I didn't know how to fill it with anything else besides just grabbing all these things that I need, this, caffeine, cigarettes, women, pussy, you know, everything. And so finally we started dating. Everything was good, you know. It seemed good, at least. And then we started hanging out. She used to come over. She lived at the Solution, so she'd come over to my rehab, you know, and we'd hang out at the tables, and then I'd go over to her rehab. And, you know, we tried to find a way to go have sex, and then, because we hadn't yet since we met in rehab. So then we had an overnight pass one night, and we happened to go with my friend that wasn't doing too well in his program either, with his fiance, and that's another bad thing. So we went to his apartment, and we ended up getting drunk, doing ecstasy, and then I ended up shooting meth by the end of the night, and I've never done that yet. In my experience, it has taken me out and brought me to lower depths than I've ever been before in my life. And it was really scary, and I had to try to figure out what the cause of that was, and I couldn't see it. I kept trying to get sober again, and then hunting for women and sex and pleasure. And it led to the same thing. I mean, most of the time. Not all the time, but most of the time. But that one little time that didn't is what led me to keep doing that and not get the real solution to my problem. Because it worked for a while. And then, but on my journey, I started to realize these things because of going through the steps with my sponsors. Because I had a couple sponsors. I've been in and out since I was 15 and I'm 21 years old. And I started to see these patterns that I had in relationships and these patterns that I had through my life and working the steps and what was going on here, like the real causes and conditions of my disease. So then I realized that I have to put God above everything or else I'm going to get fucked up again. And that means women, and that means all this. Relationships, I think you can get into a relationship in sobriety, because I'm currently in one. I am dating a normie. I don't know if that makes it a difference. But I have to put my higher power first. The moment I put her above it, I lose everything else. So I have to remain conscious that having God number one and not trying to selfishly pull all these things to make me feel better, if I don't go to God for the answer, then I'm going to get messed up again and it's going to lead me out. And it's scary because, you know, I think about it sometimes. It's like, well, am I doing this right? Is it going to lead me out again? But I have trust in God, and I don't know if it's the best idea. I really don't know. I couldn't tell you that, honestly. But I know that I'm working my program this time, and I know that I'm not just trying to get laid. Am I just trying to get this satisfaction of love? Because I get that from my higher power today. And that's really where the magic's at, in my eyes. But I don't know. I don't got much more to say about it, honestly. But yeah, that's all I got. Thank you.
Thanks, Taylor. Rob, it's good to be live and sober at a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous tonight, and pretty cool deal. Thanks, guys, for sharing a lot of good stuff so far. And I'm glad, Joel, you'd asked about the sex inventory in the book, and I was thinking about the fourth step earlier, you know, and I don't think anybody should be in a relationship who hasn't done a fourth step, because they don't know the truth about themselves, and if they haven't done a fourth step, they probably haven't done a fifth step, and they haven't done six and seven, and I think six and seven are really some of the first where we take a look deep inside us and find out what was broken. We kind of know what's broken in the fourth and fifth, but what the action is that's positive going forward that sets us right with, you know, other people in the world. And I've heard a lot. I have never heard more good stuff on how to have a relationship than I have in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, and it didn't, I try to tell guys I work with and sponsor, you know, you gotta jump back, get into that mosh pit again. You gotta jump into that scene. Don't become a celibate for 4 or 5 years and then try to start dating again. That poses a different set of problems, but, be careful. I had a sponsee that my first sponsee said, Rob, what happens if, what did they say about this thing? Don't get in a relationship within the first year. And I said, Brian, if you get into a relationship and it's awesome and she hurts you the worst way possible, if she sleeps with your best friend or she hurts you the worst way possible, would you drink? And he said, over a woman? And I said, well, you know, if that's your attitude, then go right ahead. Well, he found a girl. She was cute. She was great. She slept with one of his best friends and it tore him up, but he had already promised that he would not drink over a woman. You know, they used to say behind every skirt's a slip. And, you know, there's a lot of AA truth that isn't in the book of combined experience and what we know. And, you know, what I know is that, we can do things, we can have a good time, but there's a big difference between pleasure and happiness. And if we really want happiness out of life and we don't want that immediate, and we're willing to grow past that immediate pleasure, you know, we can have it. I've been married for 14 years. My wife and I were not, she was in a relationship with somebody else who was still out there, you know, kind of flopping around and coming in and out of CA and AA. And I knew her deal with him. I had not been, you know, waiting around for her, but I really liked being around her a lot. So I was always trying to get her friends to have her come along whenever we did things like, you know, Laughlin turnarounds, tubing, you know, sporting events, whatever. Finally, at 5 years sober, she broke up with this guy, and we went out to Denny's with the group Alcoholics Anonymous. We had known each other well for a couple of years, and you know, everybody went home and we stayed around and talked. And then that Tuesday night, we went out and we danced to Rage Against the Machine. Went back to her place, and we've been together ever since. And we got married after being together for 3 years. And what I know of Alcoholics Anonymous relationships are, especially when I was 26, I got sober at 26. It was, do I have enough money to get in? Can I smoke in their car and will she be there? Those are my big decisions on the weekends, you know. Do they smoke? Can I have a cigarette in their car? Do I have enough money? And then sometimes it didn't matter and will she be there? And, you know, AA's history is filled with, an underlying current of, disastrous relationships. And occasionally we have smashing success like AA number 7 or 9. The guy is responsible to give credit to, as we understand him in the third step. He had gone on a 12-step call at a year sober. After he'd come back in again, he was the atheist who went upstate New York, got drunk, came back teachable, got sober again, went on a 12-step call, was sober a year, and he ended up marrying the girl he went on a 12-step call for. And they stayed married, moved to San Diego, and they grew up, and they stayed sober for the rest of their lives in Southern California. And in fact, he even hosted Bill Wilson's natural mother for Christmas and Easter and Thanksgiving at their house for several years before she ended up passing. And all that stuff's available if you do some hunting on the history of it. But that kind of a story is not common. There's a lot more crash and burns than there are anniversaries in AA, especially if we're getting into relationships and we don't know who we are yet. Scott R., who passed away a couple years ago, used to give a lot of workshops in Southern California, one of my heroes. He tells a great story of the guy that comes up to him and says, "God, I just don't understand what she doesn't see in me." And Scott says, "Well, let's look at the record. You're 90 days sober. Your ex-wife has a restraining order out against you. You haven't taken care of the felonies. You're still on probation. You don't have a driver's license or a job. What exactly would you be bringing to a relationship besides stalking skills?" And I love that, you know, and I hope I never forget these things. You know, when I did a roundup in Rocky Point for years, and we had a speaker that would get up there. He'd been married 7 times. And on the questionnaires, women would always say, "Why is this guy who obviously hates women doing the relationships workshop?" We'd scratch our heads and say, "That's a good question." None of us could answer it. So we'd get somebody else to do the relationships workshop. We're not a program that's built on our virtues. We're a program that's held together with each other by our vices, you know. And we have thoughts, actions. I can guarantee you one of the bigger meetings around my neighborhood is because there's good-looking women there. The guys, I know they go to that meeting, and there's a huge attraction to that, you know. And I got sober at the 1008 before it was the 1008, and it's a kind of a wild group now. But you know, there's a lot of lessons to be learned, but I know the harshness with these lessons is that some of us die, you know, a long way from home on the south side of Phoenix when it doesn't work out the way we want. And I got to get through a lot of things before I know what it's like to turn to God, you know, when shit hits the fan in my life before, because a relationship will surely bring these things up. You know, and especially there's a line in the 10th step in the 12x12 that says, "Nothing pays off so much like restraint of pen and tongue." And I can tell you that I found nothing that has helped my relationship more than staying the heck out of the way. And, you know, and I don't think either of us stay married for 14 years if we're saying what's really on our minds, because it's not really what's in our hearts, you know. And I'm just glad to be alive and sober and a part of anything that's really cool. And I have another sponsee who was a year sober, and we went into the Flagstaff Roundup, and this is about 4 years ago. He met a girl with 8 days from Flagstaff, and they got together, and he was completely dishonest with himself. They just had a kid. They're married now, and things seem to be working out despite all of the odds, because there's certainly a lot more disasters than there are non-disasters. But I'm glad to be on this side, and know that if we are willing to look inside, there isn't any. We can all have good relationships. It's just a matter of being willing to wait and have patience. And there's so much to it with that. And I'm just glad to be here with you guys. I'll pass.
Thank you.
Let's get one more round of applause for all our speakers.
And doing things together, we'll see where our feet are, where we're firmly planted, and we'll know what we want out of the future. It's going to have to be patience. You know, I think we're social creatures. We're meant to be linked and or hooked up. So some of us, you know, seem to be fine, but I think you'll get there, and it just may take time, but we have to know who we are first. I was in the international convention in Toronto in 2000, and we listened to this guy, Cersei Waller, talk, and we ended up talking to him afterwards, and he was good friends with Bill. He said his numbers were 95, 65, and 59. He was 95 years old, or 93 or 95. He'd been married 65 years, and he was 59 years sober. And he said if it wasn't for the 59, the other two numbers wouldn't have happened. And, you know, so we've really got to put sobriety first, and sooner or later it shall come along. But we got to know where we are. If I'm living in two different cities, you know, if I meet a girl in one of them, I'm going to probably move to that city. I'll be living in one city after that, if she's the right one. But I don't think we ever really know until we've started to go down a path with somebody, until we know what they want out of the future and what we want out of the future. But it has to be about sobriety if it's in AA. And Joel's recommendation of going to Al-Anon is huge. There's just a lot of information out there about the inside-out deal. And the more searching and the more coming to grips with how God's really running life, the better off we get with you know, anything we do. You know, I think it was, you had said that we're, if it's selfish, we gotta stay away from it. If it's dishonest, we can't go that route. You know, we can't be self-seeking. And so we have to be honest. And we have to be honest with anybody we're either dating or wanting to get in a relationship with. And I think the difference between dating and having a relationship is just about a second cup of coffee. You know, I've seen people date for a period of time, but it's far more, I just see a lot more people, you know, we go out for coffee and we go, it's, I don't know, we tend to be a group that has pole vaulted past norms in society. But, you know, when this program was created, the divorce rate was 20%. And now it's, what, 65, 70% or something like that. So it's just a different world now, and we have to be a little bit more tied to what we want out of life. And it helps to want to be in a relationship more than it does to want to be with that girl. If I want to be with that girl, chances are she's going to end up being human pretty quickly. But if I want to be in a relationship, I'll look past the humanness in her, and we'll be able to keep the relationship as a focus and bring God into it. And it's just some things I've learned that seem to work. Where we both have to want to be in a relationship. We both have to want to be long term, you know, and get past the fact that we're both real human. With that, thanks for the question, Jeff. I'll pass.
So wait, to clarify, if I was, or if a sponsee was?
If a sponsee came to you and was like, sleeping with a
14-year-old
girl.
Well, I mean,
restate the question so we get on tape.
What's that?
The tape won't pick up.
Restate the question.
Okay, so the question was, you know, what to do if a sponsee comes to you with relationship problems that might be a little bit on the illegal side or inappropriate side, such as a significant illegal age gap. My response to that would be, I think you pretty much hit it dead on the hammer, you know, asking them, is it selfish? Is it self-seeking? What are your motives in this? You know, and trying to bring to light the importance of kind of like what I talked about in my share of not looking at other people as material objects that we're trying to get something out of, but more as other human beings with their own experiences, struggles, you know, treating other people the way that we want to be treated. And I feel like if you raise, you know, the question to a sponsee, you know, like, are you treating this person like another human being, giving them an opportunity to, I don't know, in that case, like, grow up and, you know, become an adult, go through the kind of things they need to, like, are you robbing this person of an opportunity to experience an important part of their life? You know, I'm not exactly sure how I would handle that, but I feel like, you know, the best thing you could do is try to raise enough questions in them to bring that awareness within themselves that what they're doing isn't the right thing. I feel like at a certain level, you know, it's important to give our advice and, you know, to recommend to them to step away from the situation and trying to find ways to identify with them and relate to them. But, you know, I don't know, somebody else might have a little bit more on this one. So I'm going to pass it over.
I've recently been listening to a great speaker. His name is Mark. And he talks about something called spiritual consent. And I would ask if that person will allow me to have spiritual consent, which means I can say things that you may not agree with, but I believe this is what's going to save your life. You know, and if they give me spiritual consent, then I'll tell them exactly what I feel, and that you're doing something that's in jeopardizing, not only is it hurting this young lady, but you may go to jail. And I would just, that's my personal take on it. And since you gave me spiritual consent, I can say that. Otherwise, the other way I would take it is, are you telling me or are you asking me what I would do? If they're just telling me, then I'm just listening and nodding my head. If they say, what would you do? Then again, it's the same spiritual consent issue. Then I tell them exactly.
Value the most in your significant other, and in mine, it's her heart and her openness, her love. We showed up back at her house after going on this date, and we walked inside, and she had a German Shepherd, and I saw the way she treated her German Shepherd, and I said, if he can get away with that, you know, I'm golden, You know, I have no problems. You know, it's that heart, that love of life. But I can guarantee you, the guys I've known that have screwed around with this deal for a long time are looking for quick fixes, and they're not willing to put in the time and the effort of the 1 p.m. or the 1 a.m., the 11 p.m. or the 10:30 nights when we're scratching to get out of our own skin. And we got to avoid, you know, one of those places where we can get that relief. And if we don't get the relief some way, we'll look for it in other ways, you know. Usually relief can be the enemy of recovery. And we got to put the recovery first. And there's a lot that follows with recovery, like living one day at a time. And the only way I know of anybody that's had a great relationship, and there are some around, if I want to know how to do something and I've never done it before, I go to the guy that's done it before. I can go to the guy that screwed it all up, like that one guy that did the relationships workshop, but I'd like to go to the guy that's been successful with it. And usually they say they live one day at a time, they put God first, and the guy says, I listen, and that's hard, you know, we know what women want, but what we really don't know is what works in a relationship, what a woman wants in a relationship. And so I got to ask the questions a lot of times. Hey, what's going on? You know, what are we up to? You know, where are we going? And that kind of stuff. So I hope I've answered your question. If anybody else has anything, go right ahead.
Taylor, alcoholic.
Taylor.
With my girlfriend, as I said, she was a normie. The thing I cherish the most about... I think the coolest thing is I dated her last time I was sober as well, but she comes to every event with me, every convention. She comes to meetings with me. She's supportive. She knows when I'm busy. She knows when I'm busy. Like if I'm hanging out with her, I got to do a 10-step call. I got to do these things. So she knows that this has to come first, and I cherish that more than anything because I've had other women who are opposite. And I also cherish that, like, she puts God first over me too, and she doesn't even need to, but she believes in God and she does that, and that's awesome to me because, you know, normal people don't have to believe in God to survive like we do. So I thought that was pretty cool. And working a program with my relationship, we're like best friends as well. It's not like a, you know, we fight all the time, and like when I was out, you know, and had a girlfriend. It's a lot more peaceful, I guess, in a sense. And it's something that brings joy today instead of like more problems, like my past one. So, yeah.
Thanks.
Again, I'm an alcoholic. On that one for me, it has to be, definitely her sense of compassion, you know, the fact that we share the same values and her sense of humor. The compassion for me was a big deal. You know, I'm used to being a selfish, self-seeking person. I'm used to trying to get what I want out of other people. And I'm also used to gravitating towards like-minded individuals and getting what I give back. You know, so my dating history consists of other selfish, self-seeking individuals, and I'd never really experienced anything healthy before. You know, and I've had the opportunity with my girlfriend to experience that, you know, and also to experience an open and honest relationship where, you know, I can talk to her and be real, you know, like just be who I am, open and honest. You know, the alcoholic very much so loves to live the double life, you know, and for the first time in my life, I don't have to do that. I don't have to put up a front or a facade around her. I can just be, you know, a geeky, dorky guy, you know, hanging out, doing weird shit and, you know. And we're happy, you know, we're totally happy doing that sort of thing. So, you know, that's great. And you know, the sense of humor is fun too, but what's important, it goes into all that, the compassion, the openness, the honesty is, you know, for me, it's the communication at the end of the day. And that's what I was so grateful to be forced to learn by our situation, not being able to be physically near each other in our early sobriety while we were dating, you know, that distance. You know, allowed us to build a relationship on communication, so I really get to know who this person is, you know. We know each other on a very sincere level, and we have things to talk about. Because one of my other big problems before was, you know, what do you do after you have sex? Like, I never knew what to do after you have sex. Like, okay, you've done this, like, now what do we talk about? The weather? That's because I never had anything in common with this individual before, you know? And so the ability to just spend time with my girlfriend today and just have fun doing whatever we're doing and enjoying that time spent together regardless of the situation, you know, it's a different feeling and it's a much better feeling to be in, and it gives me hope and an opportunity, you know, that I can actually stick with somebody and, you know, and have a happy, fulfilling life without being entirely caught up by those things like the selfish, self-seeking motives that I chased after so avidly before. So yeah, that's all I got.
Are we getting ready to close? Time to
get it. Yeah, we got a couple minutes.
During those 5 years that I was dating around, I discovered that beauty was only skin deep. I was in bed with some very beautiful women, and the sex was horrible. And then I was in bed with women who didn't, they weren't tens, they may have been a seven or an eight, but they had a beauty inside. And they were giving. And the sex was so much more wonderful because I had somebody that was participating with me. I was giving to her and she was giving to me. And then I realized that's what I want. I want a woman who is giving. You know, and that further developed until I met my wife, Laura, and married her. She's a caretaker, and I'm not ashamed of that. I think the women in Al-Anon are it's like the yin and the yang. You know, we're takers and they're givers, and there's a reason why we mate. I just want to end with something, a warning that I heard about dating in sobriety. A friend of mine, early in sobriety, I learned this from her. Her name is Peggy. And she said, dating someone you met in the rooms of AA is like dating somebody that you met while you were locked up in an insane asylum. In other words, when you view everybody in the rooms of AA, picture them with hospital gowns on. We're very sick people.